This call is now being recorded.
Is Anna on the line?
Yes, I'm on. Yes.
Hi, Anna. She sounds like a real character. She was cooking pork chops and green beans, and I didn't hear the rest of it. And
oh,
she
wow.
said she got so hot cooking that she forgot to call in. Oh, boy, I'd like to be sitting at her table right now. Let's see if she does this right.
You sound hungry.
Actually, you know what? I'm trying to. I eat a lot of healthy foods, like I eat fish at least twice a week and
uh-huh.
all of that. But I'm trying to reduce my salt because I'm wondering if my swollen leg doesn't have something to do with salt. But then the doctor gave me an interesting report today, but I don't want to put it on this teleconference. So
we'll talk later.
We'll talk about it later. But I am hungry. I'd like to have a big piece of fish
and green beans and
fresh tomato and maybe a green onion. And doesn't that sound good?
Yes, it does.
Now, I'm afraid that she's just not going to do this. Buddy, now this is, I think, Sophie, is that you?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. I'm so glad to have you online. Well, now I want to introduce you to two people on the line, and one of them you already know, Buddy Carnute. You've already talked to Buddy several times.
Yeah, right.
And then we have another Rosie whose name is Anna Hess. Buddy is in the western part of more or less west central part of West Virginia in a town called St. Albans. And Anna Hess is up at where West Virginia University is, up in Morgantown, West Virginia.
Okay.
It's really very close to Pittsburgh and all of that. Anyway, they both have really interesting stories themselves. Why don't I let them introduce themselves to you? And
okay.
Then I'll start our interview, okay?
All right.
All right. Anna, why don't you start telling her who you are? Because I think she knows Buddy a little bit, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. Sophie? I am Anna, and I got interested in the Rosies because my mother was a Rosie the Riveter. And I only worked in a small tire plant, but I did work during World War II, and... where are you located?
I'm located in Winchester, Kentucky.
Oh, okay.
And now Anna, she always makes little of what she's done, like it's not important. But Anna was, she was only 15 when the war started, and she made, she helped to make truck tires in Akron, Ohio. So 15-year-old teenager, that's hard work, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, hard work.
I thought the work I did was easy because I was used to working on a farm, and that was real hard work.
Oh, that's hard work. I grew up on a farm.
I'm
anxious to hear your story. So.
Yeah, we really are. Now, Buddy, tell her what you did. I don't know that she knows that.
Yeah, I think she does. Don't you, Sophie?
I think I do.
Riveted.
Yeah,
we talked a long time.
Yeah, right.
You know, one of the things that we always like to do is kind of give you an idea of who we are and what we're doing here with us, Sophie. But actually, my mother was a Rosie the Riveter, and I grew up in Huntington, West Virginia. But I was born when the war first started in Europe, and my father was in the military, in the Navy.
Yeah.
And then my mother had a second child who was born just after we got into the war. So I was born at the time Europe got into the war, and my sister was born at the very same time America entered the war. And I don't know why I've always been so fascinated by what was happening at home. I think it's partly this remembering such things as... you know, conserving everything. You know, we didn't even throw a rag away. And we grew our own chickens and this and that. But for whatever reason, I got interested in it. And Now what we're doing is interviewing Rosies, and we're getting Rosies and the public to know one another. It's one thing to interview a Rosie and walk away and wonder if anybody ever picked it up and listened to it. It's another thing to say, we really are glad that your little community down there, headed by Michael Kindred, who's a very special person, he basically has made it very clear that he wants to know the Rosies and work with you all. And so you were there the day they planted the tree down there in May 14th, weren't you?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about that. Did that day go well? What happened there that day?
Well, it was really nice. There's a lot of Girl Scouts. They were there. Of course, they wanted to talk to me about all of this stuff, you know, how I got the job and all of that there, because I worked at Santa Barbara at the aircraft plant there, you know, Lockheed. And I didn't work too long. I think I worked about 4 months. And but that's what I did. I made holes for the rivets to go in, you know, on the tips of the wings. And I didn't get to meet too many of the girls because for the simple reason that the working in that plant, it was so noisy, you know.
Oh, that's interesting. I've never heard that. I've asked people, did you get to know very many Rosies?
No.
And they say, they usually will just say, well, we worked too hard, but I never thought about the noise being so great. You all couldn't talk, could you?
Yeah, right, yeah. And you had a special way to dress and all of that. But I enjoyed it all because I thought it was easy from the work that I had already done at home, you know. I thought it was like,
well, I've been told for 7 years now that the best Rosies in America were from Kentucky and West Virginia, and I'd like to believe that. I don't know. I don't know if you want to compete in that way.
Well, you know, I'm not from Kentucky, really. I was
where
born
are you from?
I was born in Durango, Colorado, and raised in Wyoming.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I lived about 15 years in Colorado. Is that right?
Yeah.
So well, let's talk about that. Then, when you were born, what was your name when you were born?
Mary Sophie. Maria Sophia. I'm Spanish.
Oh, you're Spanish?
Yes.
Oh, is that right?
No, I'm not Mexican. Now I'm from Spain descent.
Oh my goodness! What about that? So now, what was your maiden name?
Santa.
S-A-N-A.
S-A-N-A.
S-E-N-A.
Yeah, you know, it's spelled different ways, you know.
Yes.
It's spelled S-E-N-N-A. That's the way I spelled it most of the time, because that's the way it sounds. But now my brothers all spell it S-E-N-A.
Uh-huh. Is that right?
Uh-huh. I said,
where were you born?
I was born in Durango, Colorado.
And what year was that?
1923.
So I'm trying to think. So you were about 18 or so when the war started, or when we got into the war.
Yeah, about that, yeah. Not quite 18, I don't think. I think I was about 17-something, you know, but not quite 18. Because what time of the year did that? See, when did that war start? What month was that started?
It was December.
December. I guess I was already. Because I was born in September, see.
Uh-huh. What's your birthday?
September 25th, 1923.
How about that? Well, now, if you grew up in Durango, Colorado, boy, you're almost down there in cowboy country. So tell us about that.
Well, you know, we moved to Wyoming in 1930. There were six of us kids at that time. So
uh-huh.
We moved to Wyoming in 1930.
And why did your family move? What was that all about?
Well, my dad went to do farming.
Hmm. And are we talking about like a cattle ranch or a real farmer?
It was just farmland, really. And the community that we live in, they were all from. I lived in a Mormon community, really.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, how fascinating. Well, now, do you remember the first day of the war? Do you remember VJ Day? I mean, Pearl Harbor Day?
Oh, yeah, I sure do. In fact, I wasn't at home when that, my parents, of course, you know, we just had a family car. And I happened to be in another town when I heard that on the news, and so I hurried home, because we just had poor beginnings, really, when we, you know, we, And so I hurried home so my parents could hear it on the radio because the car had a radio in it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Not everybody had radios when you lived out on the prairie.
Oh, I know. I know all about the prairie out there. I'll tell you, and sometimes you still can't get reception out there on the prairie, can you? Have you? I've been out on the prairie on some country roads out there in eastern Colorado.
Oh, yeah.
Where you can't even get a radio station, even today.
I know. My son has a cabin in the mountains of Wyoming, so I know what that's like.
Yeah, really. Well, now, I'm real fascinated by this. Now, you grew up then in this little town. What was the name of the town?
I grew up in Wyoming, yeah.
What was the town?
The town was named was Byron.
B-Y-R-O-N.
B-Y-R-O-N, right. Byron, Wyoming.
How about that? And now, tell us about the farming and your schooling. Tell me anything about your childhood.
Of course, you know, when I was going to school, we didn't have school buses or nothing like that. I rode to school in a covered wagon.
Is that right?
Yes. And later on, the people started owning cars, so they used the cars to pick up the kids to take them to school.
And so did you go to a one-room school, or what was that?
You know, they had, like, first and second grade and third, like that, because the school wasn't that big.
They
had, like,
combined
first and second
grade.
And third and fourth and, you know, on up there, you know.
Hmm.
I didn't go to the ninth grade. You know, it was hard for my parents because there was so many of us kids. And in the fall, I would have to drop out of school to help put the crops and stuff up. All of us, and that was the oldest in the family. There was me and my sister, and then two sisters and a brother. My brother came in fourth, so he was pretty young, you know.
So now there was you, and then tell me the birth order again. You were the oldest?
I was the oldest, and then my sister Leela, and then my sister Vicky, and then my brother Ray and Chris. There was 23 of us kids.
Oh, my God, you're kidding me. No, 23 children. Oh, my gosh.
One mother, one father, no twins, no nothing.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my.
Listen, I bet your mother had varicose veins, didn't she?
No, she didn't. No, she didn't.
She didn't? Well, I'll tell you, I got varicose veins, and I didn't have 23 children.
Yeah, no, my mother didn't have varicose veins.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, now, what did you grow? Did you grow your own food?
We grew our own food. We sure did. My mother did a lot of canning. She made all the bread. She made soap. She made all her clothes.
Right. And now, did either of your brothers have to go into the service? What happened when...
My oldest brother went to the service.
And what was his name?
His name was Ray.
And he was then about 5 or 6 years younger than you, am I right?
Something like that, yeah.
Hmm.
I did have a list of when he was born, but I put so much stuff away I can't keep track of it.
I know, and you can't find it when you need it, and it's not there when you don't need it.
If I could just put my hand on it, it'd be nice, but you can't.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, I just... Go ahead.
Well, now tell us about. I want to know more. You're off visiting somebody in another town, and you hear about Pearl Harbor, and it's on a Sunday.
It was on a Sunday. Yes, it sure was.
And tell us about what happened there and how that worked out.
Right away, everybody was like in an uproar, you know, and all the boys, all the young men from all the little towns, they all went to the. They all joined in. They all went to the service. So there wasn't any men left around there to do any work, really. Just the older folks like my dad and my uncle and then these young men there, because it was their parents. And it was left up to all the older people to do the farming and take care of everything.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
That's the way it was.
Yeah. And did you grow, what kind of food did you grow?
We grew everything. You name it, it was there. My dad planted like 5 acres of potatoes. We had our own meat. We had hogs and chickens and, And then, of course, we ate a lot of wild meat, too, you know, since I live out there on the prairie. We had a lot of deer and elk and that kind of food, pheasants.
Yeah.
I didn't care too much about the grouse. Some of the meat I didn't like, as it was too spicy with sage, wild sage, you know.
Is that right? So the grouse would eat the sage?
The grouse would eat the sage, and you could taste it in the meat.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that right? Did you ever kill a buffalo or see a buffalo?
Oh, we saw buffaloes all the time because we just lived like 93 miles from Yellowstone Park.
Oh, isn't that beautiful out
there?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Oh, that's a special trip.
Yeah.
That's
then we live close to the Montana border.
Yeah. And I've been up there. And one day I was painting my house. I had a deck house in Boulder, Colorado, and we were going to paint the deck. And I don't know what struck me, but it wasn't that I didn't want to do the painting, because I did. But I said to my husband, I came in about maybe 9:30, 10 o'clock, and I said, "We're going to Yellowstone." He said, "What?" And I said, "Let's pack cheese and apples and whatever we've got, and let's go to Yellowstone, because if we don't go, we might not ever go."
Yeah.
And we drove. We arrived at 4 in the morning, and I'm telling you, that was an experience. Incredible wildlife, isn't it?
Oh, it
so
is,
did you
yeah.
ever did you ever eat a buffalo?
Oh yes, I've eaten buffalo. Oh yeah, there wasn't anything out there that I didn't eat. You know, really.
Really? How about that? Well, so now you're in another town there, and you hear about the war, and you who was driving that car?
Excuse me.
Who was driving the car?
Me.
You were driving. How
I was
did
driving
you learn
that
to...
car. I sure was. And back when I was driving, you didn't have to have no insurance or drive or license or nothing.
Yeah. Hmm. And so now you drove home so that your family could hear the...
Oh, yeah, right. So I drove home. It wasn't very far. It was about 18 miles, I think. And we lived, of course, we didn't have a lot of neighbors, you know. And because everybody lived on the prairie, didn't there wasn't a lot of people just didn't have radios and all that, you know.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Well now at this point, how old were you? 17 or 18 years old?
Yeah, I was about 17 and a half, I guess, something like that.
Okay. And now, how did you decide then to go to California? How did all that happen?
Well, you know what? Of course, all of us girls worked, you know. All of us girls worked. And so anyhow, my sister happened to marry a boy from the hometown there, and they moved to California because his mother lived out there in California. So then they kept writing to me and said, "You better come out here and get you a good job." So I thought, well, you know, that'd be nice. I think I'll save up my money and go. So I did. I saved up my money, and I got on the bus, and I went to California.
And you went by Greyhound, I'm assuming.
I went by Greyhound, and I think there was just a lot of people on the bus, you know. And then when I landed in Los Angeles, Lord of mercy, I was petrified there were so many people there. I wasn't used to that. and got on like
it's no it's no better now. I assure you.
Well, that's the story.
It's a pretty crazy place. Yeah.
Yeah. Really. So then,
what was Los Angeles like? What was your impression of LA?
Well, you know, there was just so many people there and so many different races, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I was never used to all of them speaking a different language, and I was just got. And of course, I was pretty shy. I wasn't really used to being out in the outside world, really, you know. And so then I got down there to a little town named Carpinteria, where my sister was living. And I was just about there about a day or two, so then I went and applied for a job, and they hired me right away, and I worked at where they pack lemons. I was
uh-huh.
for Sunkist.
Okay.
I packed lemons, and that was all young girls, and they were a lot of fun. We bought sheet music and sang and learned a lot of songs. Oh, we just had a barrel of fun. To me, all that was like playing. After working so hard on the farm, you know, of course, my dad, he depended on me a lot. I drove the tractor and I plowed. I did everything. Only thing he wouldn't let me run was the sickle mower. That was the only thing. But I could handle all the other big farm equipment that he had, the disc and the harrow and all that, you know. He just, my dad was real patient and just taught me everything.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, now I'm still, let's talk about how come you were working for Sunkist. Tell me, I missed a little bit of what you said. You said there were so many people and so many races, and how did you find out about this?
That was in Los Angeles where there were so many people, and all the people of so many races.
Okay, and then what, you got a little something, and I missed, I'm sorry, I didn't hear it.
Then I rode the bus there to Carpinteria, a little small little town. And I got off the bus there, and that's where my sister was living at, you know.
Okay, spell a town for me. Carpenter?
Carpinteria, Carpinteria, Carpinteria. And it's right on the coast, close to Santa Barbara. You might find it on the Atlas.
Uh-huh. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm a geographer, Bug, so anytime I hear a different town, I always come home and look it up on the map.
Look it up, yeah, that's great. Tell me, so now they hired you to pick lemons.
No, I didn't pick lemons. We wrapped them and boxed them.
Okay.
We had a lady that taught us how to do it, and the smaller the lemons, the more money you made. And then they was in graduated sizes.
Uh huh.
So I always tried to get it in the bins where all the little lemons was at. I could rap pretty good, and I was pretty swift at it, you know.
Now, you didn't rap every lemon. You just rapped. What does it mean to rap a lemon?
Oh, you had like a board on one side of you, and you had like a rubber finger stall, and you just hit that paper and picked up the lemon and put it in that paper, and then you give it like a swirl and wrap it in the box where you put it in. It was a pattern. You put 1, 2, 3, and then go back and put 1, 2, 3. That's the way you filled up the box.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Fascinating. Now, these lemons were not used in the war effort. Were these lemons sent over to the food for the troops, or what?
That I never did know.
Uh huh.
I never did know that.
And then when did you start working then in the factory?
At the plant, at the Lockheed mm-hmm. Aircraft plant. Oh, right. I don't know. I think I worked there. I can't remember even what month it was that started working there. I worked there about 3 months. And then my husband wanted me to quit and come to Kentucky. That's how I got here.
Oh, and so your husband?
See, my husband was in the Marine Corps, and he was in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so just tell me all about that. So how did you meet your husband?
I love music and dancing, so I went to the American Legion with some friends.
Uh-huh.
And that's where I met my husband.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
So you met this Kentuckian is basically the story then.
Yeah, we hit it right off, and he was real interested in how I grew up. And of course, I told him about horseback riding and fishing, and of course that was just right up his alley. That fishing, he loved to fish
right.
And hunt. And of course my people, they hunted and fished all the time.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah,
really.
It was all fun to me.
Well, you know, I've always liked Kentuckians. My mother had a phrase that I've thought about a million times in my life. If people were people had something that they were discussing and they couldn't seem to get, they couldn't move forward on it, whether they were arguing or just couldn't have a problem, my mother would yell out, "Call in a flat-footed Kentuckian." and whatever that meant, exactly, I don't know or where it came from, but I will tell you what it meant was that Kentuckians are very practical, and they just don't stand around and argue by the hour like politicians in the East or whatever.
Yeah.
They just plant their feet and say, well, we're going to do it this way, or why don't we try it this way?
Uh-huh.
And so is he a practical guy?
Yes, my husband, I'll tell you what, my husband was there wasn't enough hours in the day, you know, that he wanted to be doing something. And I got my youngest sons the same way. There's not enough hours in the day, you know, to get accomplish what they want to accomplish. My husband was the same way.
Huh, interesting. And what was your husband's name?
Lewis, Robert Lewis.
Now, did you married then out there in California?
Yes, ma'am, I did.
Huh. And then when did you start having a family, Sophie?
Oh, I started having a family, when was it? My son was born in, my oldest son was born in June in 1944.
So this, the war was still over.
Right. The war was still going on.
Actually, June of 1944 is D-Day.
I know.
So, really. So do you know the years that you worked? What year might you have worked at Lockheed?
I must have worked there like in 43 or something like that.
Well, tell me about how they trained you and what did you do at Lockheed?
Well, you know what? They showed you a film about all this stuff, you know? And you took notes, and then you had like a trial run of, you know, if you could handle the machinery and all of that. And that's how I learned, you know.
So, in other words, they showed your film, and they it was a film about how to rivet.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
And then you had special clothes that you wore. You know, I wore like a jumpsuit, like, and it couldn't be tight. It had to be pretty loose, and your shoes had to be a size larger than what you normally wore, and they had to wear your hair in a snood, because at that time my hair was, of course, clear down the middle of my back.
Mm-hmm.
So I wore a snood all the time, you know.
And a snood now is basically, it's almost like a very loose hairnet, am I correct?
It's like a loose hairnet, yeah, with big weave like a fishing net, you know. And
right.
you put your hair in it, and you brought it up and tied a big ribbon right at the top. That's how it was.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
And my hair
well,
was
now, do you remember anything at all about the war? Now, you had a brother in the war, right?
Yeah, I had a brother in the regular army.
Yeah. Tell me where he was stationed and what
he
that
was stationed in. Florida.
Uh huh.
He was stationed in Florida.
And what did he do there?
You know, I never did know. I think he was in regular army, whatever they do.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Then I had a brother that was in the war too, and he was stationed up in Washington, and he got burned up there really bad.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
In Washington State, you mean?
Yeah, right.
What happened? How did
they was on patrol. Patrol one night, and they had a big bonfire going, and you know, the weather in Washington is so more damp and all that all the time. Got too close to the fire, and his coat caught on fire, and burned him real bad from the waist down.
Really? Well, that's too bad. Right.
Yeah, I think he was in the hospital up there for about 13 months. They had to do a lot of skin grafting and everything.
Now, he was in the military at the time then?
Uh-huh,
That brother was in the military as well?
Yeah.
Oh, really? What branch was he in?
He was in the regular army.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So both your brothers were in the army. How about that? Really?
Yeah.
Well, tell me anything you can think about on the workplace floor or anything about working. Now, Lockheed was the only place that you worked that did what you called like defense military work, is that right?
Right, yeah.
Tell me anything you can remember. Was it like one great big space with a...
Yeah, it was a great big... It was a great big building, and they had all kinds of different equipment all around the walls, you know, and all these girls had their own stations where they all worked at, and you didn't see much of them because you was so busy working yourself, you know. And the only time that I... And then, of course, there was a couple of men that I knew that they were friends of the family that I used to stay with, and they if you broke a if you broke a um, a bit, then you'd have to take it to the desk, and then they would replace it. You know, but these are all older married men. They had families already. You know.
And now, did you buy your own tools, or they?
No, they furnished you the tools.
They did.
Uh huh.
Did you like doing riveting?
Oh yeah, it was. You know what? It was like playing. To me, it was like playing. You had this thing that you brought down, and then they had this lever down here on the floor, and you mashed it like a paddle, you know.
Uh-huh.
And they would drill, and they would make them holes in the tip end of the wings. Yeah, it was fun. I thought it was fun. I thought it was like playing, really.
So now, did you make the holes, or did you actually put the rivets in?
I made the holes for the rivets to go in.
I see. Okay, now I understand better. I never knew that metalworking, I didn't know that when you cut those holes, it was kind of like a sewing machine where you push a treadle?
You know what? I wish I would have looked at it a lot better, but I was so young back then, you didn't think about that, you know. It was just a machine that you brought down with your left hand and put that drill right on that, and then you'd mash it with your pedal, and then that would grind that hole.
So you brought the what was it that you brought down with your left hand?
It was the thing that drilled the holes in the wings. So a drill.
Okay. It was the drill.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then what happened when? Do your best to tell me that.
Well, that's what I told you. Then when I put my foot on the pedal, that's when it drilled the hole.
So you bring the.
I can't explain it any better
than
that.
Where was the metal? Was the metal laying flat or?
No. They had big stacks of it. They had big stacks of metal, you know, and you would take like so many tip ends, maybe five or six, and put over there where you worked at, and then pass them on when you got the holes drilled, and then you just go get some more. It was like assembly thing.
Yeah, and did you have several layers of metal that you drilled?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Several layers. Yeah, oh yeah.
So you didn't do one layer at a time?
Yeah, we did one at a time. Sure did.
Hmm. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's fascinating. And now, how did you know where to put the holes?
They showed us all of that.
And did they have it marked, or you just knew?
Well, you could see where it was at. You could see where it was at when you had to drill.
Mm. And isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Okay.
Of course, you know, back then you weren't allowed to take cameras or nothing in there, you know. So, but
right.
I said that it would have been fun for me to have the camera to take pictures of some of that stuff, you know, where we worked at. But there was, you weren't allowed.
Oh, I wish, yeah.
Bet you weren't
and
allowed.
There are more than I was told when I first started this work there were no photos, but there are some here and there. There's actually a movie made in a wheeling in a steel factory. And you don't see too much of the actual process.
No, you don't.
Some of it's pretty interesting. But
yeah.
By and large, they, for security reasons, they just didn't tell the women, and nobody really saw it.
No, not really. You know, I lived with a husband and wife, and they had so many people. And they would go, they were like scouts, you know, and they'd have to go count the planes at night that flew over.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Yeah.
So, in other words, and these were American planes?
Oh, I'm sure they were. I'm sure they were. Yeah.
So you're saying the family that you lived with, the couple you lived with,
right,
would count the number of planes in?
Uh-huh. They were
really?
They were so nice. They were from Oklahoma, but they were the nicest couple. I missed them.
I bet you did.
Yeah, they were
actually,
so nice.
We've had a couple of Rosies tell us that it was the Oklahoma women who took care of their children and what a good job they did of taking care of their children.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like the Oklahoma people. In fact, one of my best friends, she was from Oklahoma.
What was the name of the family you lived with?
Weiser. Zalma and Bud Weiser.
W-E-I-S-E-R,
Weiser.
And yeah. Thelma and Bud?
Thelma, that was called Thelma and Budweiser. Isn't that something? Sounds like
yeah.
they've never done it.
Well, you know, it's pretty interesting. I think when you remember somebody's name, every now and then I'll remember something from forever ago. And I'll say, oh, I'll never remember that person's name, and all at once it'll
come. Yeah, hold lady, are you?
Not thinking about it. I'm 77.
77.
And I just got disabled. I broke a hip in January.
Oh, my.
And I was very positive about my ability to see this through for the next several years, but right now I'm pretty much disabled. There was nerve damage done when my hip was replaced, so I have no feeling in part of my leg and some other issues. But I'm determined to go on. Anna and Buddy know that, don't you, girls?
That hasn't slowed her down, Annie. She still works just as hard as ever.
Yeah, my doctor keeps telling me, she said, be sure you don't fall and break a hip now, because you know what's going to happen if you do at your age. And I said, oh, praise the Lord that nothing happens to me, because I do fall down once in a while.
Right. Well, yeah, it snuck up on me, and I frankly wasn't ready for it, but I don't think anybody's ready to be declared as.
Well, you know, I have asthma real bad. Kentucky hasn't been good for me, really. I've had asthma except for 70 years here.
Oh, really?
Right after I came here, I started having problems, breathing problems.
Now, that's because it's just so damp, is that right?
It's humid, real humid.
Humid, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I do know that. I lived in Colorado many years, and sometimes when I would tell people that there was often humidity in my hometown in West Virginia here of 80 or 90%, but it wasn't raining, they didn't believe me.
It had to be
raining if it's 80 or 90%.
I know when I first came to Kentucky, I came here in October, and that March I started like I had a cold, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And of course the doctor was doctoring me for a cold.
Uh-huh.
And so then they said, I don't think you've got a cold. I think you've got something deeper than that. So then they sent me to an allergy specialist, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how come I found out I had this asthma.
And then what do you take for it?
Oh, I take a breathing treatment every morning and every night. And then I have oxygen here, and I sleep with my oxygen on at night. I'm not mm-hmm. able to do a whole lot, anything of exertion. I can't do it. Just cuts my breathing. You know, you don't realize that.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of breathing for you to go to lift something
or
whatever. You don't realize how important air is in your lungs.
You never think about it, do you?
No,
I
don't. I've been to the hospital, and they've had to force air down my lungs, and then they had to reverse it and take the air out.
Oh, my goodness.
I was just about...
Well, I'll tell you, you've got some people here on the line that relate to this, because both Anna and Buddy have asthma problems or have breathing problems.
Oh, it's awful.
Yeah
I stopped breathing twice.
Well, you know what? They thought that I had stopped breathing. In fact, my son said, Mom's gone. And my daughter-in-law said, no, she's not gone, because her tongue's moving a little bit. But I was in the hospital. I was in the hospital for a whole month.
Is that right?
Intensive care. Yeah, I go to intensive care. I was there about 6 days in intensive care.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well,
if
you can still stick out your tongue to the world, then you're ready to go again, right? Honestly, really. I want to ask you about your family. Now, you had how many children?
I had three boys.
All boys?
Uh-huh.
You know, there was a bumper sticker in Boulder, Colorado that said, the mother of three boys deserves a special place in heaven.
Oh. I lost one of my boys.
Oh, did you? That's too bad. What
one.
Happened?
Charles Ray went to Vietnam, and when he came back, he never was the same.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He died at the age of 45.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
No, I've heard that so many times, and not just in Vietnam, but I've heard an awful lot of people tell me. We did an interview, I believe it was Saturday, I can't remember, of a woman who said her husband was at the Bataan March, and we hear it often that the men were never the same.
Yeah, my son was never the same. And he was a workaholic and turned into alcoholic. Liquor just killed him.
Really?
Yeah. He'd been in and out of the hospital. We did everything, you know, to get him turned around, and it just he was real soft hearted, you know. He was different than the other two boys. All three of them had different personalities.
That's for sure fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah. My youngest son, he lives here in Winchester, and he's a big businessman. He owns, I don't know, about five or six car washes and a lot of property, and he's busy all the time.
And now, what's his name?
His name is Jeffrey.
And did he go into the military?
No, he didn't go into the military, uh-uh.
And only Charles went into the military.
Yeah, Charles Ray was the only one that went. My oldest son, Bobby went to the overseas, but there was no war going on at that time. He spent 3 years in Germany, my oldest son.
Uh-huh. And was that a good experience for him, or what did the
house Oh, I think they all went over there to play, really.
Really.
I'll just be truthful with you.
I've known people who were stationed in Germany in peacetime, and they really loved it. Yeah, they thought it was, you know, a pretty well-organized country.
Yeah.
And a nice countryside and all that.
Yeah, they talked
about
it. Well,
now, I want you to tell me again about how did you find out about the job at Lockheed? Was it advertised in a paper or what?
These friends of mine that I told you that I knew, they told me that they're hiring. You said, why don't you come and apply? So I did, and they told me what day and what office to go to, and so I went.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I got the job.
And tell me exactly, you weren't married yet, of course, right?
No, I wasn't married yet, uh-uh. But I married soon thereafter.
And so when you went in and applied, did they test you or did they give you physical exams? What was that like?
No, you know, they just give you eye tests, really.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Huh. And that's it, huh?
That was it, yeah. It wasn't much. It wasn't much, really.
You know, I've often wondered, Sophie, there were married women who were pregnant and they would make them quit work. Did you know anybody who had... was pregnant by the time they were working?
No, I sure didn't. I didn't know anybody. I never saw anybody like that. Of course, you know, like I told you, I didn't get to visit too much with the girls because, you know, just as soon as they was working and just as soon as the time for them to quit, it was just a scramble to get out of the building, you know, and get home.
Well, now, what were some of the thoughts? Why do you think that the women went to the factories? Did they go just for the pay? Did they go because they felt it was their obligation?
No, they went because all the men were called. All the young men were called. All the women worked in the service stations and all of that. All the young women that didn't go,
uh-huh.
They worked in they took over the service stations and all of that.
But what was your motivation? In other words, were you trying to help with the war effort or what?
Yeah. I thought, well, I might as well try to do my part, so I went.
Yeah. You didn't ever run into a situation where you felt people looked down on you for working in a factory, did you?
No, you know what? I did find that at home. It's when I worked in the fields, like our girls used to say stuff to me about me working in the fields all the time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I just ignored them.
So when you worked in the fields, sometimes you were made fun of, but when you worked in the factories, you were not.
It's because I worked in the fields, you know. And I thought, well, you know what? This isn't the first time women have worked in the fields. Way back in the earlier part of days before I was along, they worked in the fields. They had to.
Right. Oh, no, and there's just no doubt. I mean, obviously, if you don't work, you don't eat. Anna talks about that all the time. You had to work. You worked because you had to eat, and you didn't even think about it. You didn't even think about it.
It was a way of life, that's all. It was a way of life.
It was, I know. A way of life.
Right.
Now, tell us about conserving. You switch from place to place, so did you conserve, like, you know, some people will talk about they saved oil and took it to the grocery store. What do you remember about conserving?
Well, I'll tell you what I remember about that. I remember that they always saved all the newspapers, you know,
uh-huh.
And saved all the newspapers and bundled them up and set them at the curb. And then they, while I was out there in California, they saved all the milk cartons, and they mm-hmm. were all taken. I don't know what they used them for, but they were used. And then, of course, we had ration books, you know.
Now, when you say milk cartons, you're really talking now about a wooden box or what?
No,
what is
no, they were like the ones that we used to have around here. The first ones I'd ever seen was out there in California, and of course, you know, I don't know what, but they was collecting them, and then
what were they made of?
Out of cardboard.
Cardboard. Huh. I don't think I've ever seen one.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yep.
Yep.
We used to have them all the time.
And then everybody had ration books.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I didn't do a lot of baking, so I used to trade my sugar stamps for shoe stamps.
So, in other words, you didn't want your sugar, you wanted your shoes, right?
I wasn't doing any baking, so I didn't need all that sugar.
So you had two pairs of shoes, huh? Big deal, right?
And then I knew a girl in Santa Barbara at the cosmetic counter, and I don't know why she just took a liking to me, you know.
Uh-huh.
And she would save toothpaste for me, stuff that uh-huh. you couldn't get.
Uh huh. Is that right?
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, I'm very, very interested in anything that you can remember that stands out in your mind. Now, I'm not going to tell you.
And
like
soap,
fun.
You couldn't get soap either. Detergent,
yeah.
You know, you didn't. Well, there was no such thing as detergent anyhow. But anyhow, my husband, well, my boyfriend, Louis, he used to bring me bar soap from the commissary. And it was, I think it was Cam-A. And we'd grind it to wash clothes with.
Sophie, on Sunday nights, I listen to what's called the Big Broadcast, and it's out of Washington, D.C. It's on National Public Radio.
Okay.
And they have very, very many old-fashioned radio programs. And they sometimes will do something that is specific to World War II, like they had the radio programs of D-Day. Would you be interested at any time in listening to some of those recordings?
Yeah, you know, I listen to the radio quite a bit, you know, when I can't sleep at night. Well, something else that I wanted to tell you, my son was born on D-Day.
Is that right?
My oldest son, yeah.
Now, let me think about this. So basically, D-Day had taken place 4 or 5 years before he was born. Am I right?
No, not really.
Was he born on actual D-Day?
He was born on actual D-Day, yep.
Oh, my gosh. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. So you know how old my son is. He was born in 1944. And I'm 92.
Right. How about that? Well, there's so much really very interesting stuff about D-Day. You know, you can never quit reading what's been written about it. But one of my favorite pictures that describes the importance of the roses is there's a picture taken from the land, not from the sea, but from the land looking out to sea. And every one of those ships and tanks and Goodyear blimps and all that stuff was made by the women between basically the 1st of January and in 1942 to June 8th or June 6th, 1944. So in 2.5 years, it's incredible what you women put out.
Oh, I know. I met one woman here in Winchester that she worked in the shipyards, you know.
Do you remember her name?
You know what? I had her paper here, and it got lost. I don't know how come.
Right.
But she worked in the shipyards, and I forgot what. I did remember her. It was on the coast at one of those big fish where they bring in a lot of fish. Well, I can't think of the name of the place. Doggone it! And I generally can just call it right now.
It's in California or
California,
Oregon?
Yeah.
Yeah, really. How about that? Well, now, do you remember VJ Day, the Victory Japan Day?
Oh, yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, you know, it was exciting. It was so exciting, you know, that the war had ended and all the boys were coming home and getting reacquainted with families and all that. It was a big day.
Yeah. And now, how did you get your news? Did you go to the movies to see the shorts, the newsreels at the movies, or did you just listen to the radio?
Well, you know, there was a lot of stuff in the papers, you know, a lot of stuff in the papers. No, and I never did go to the movies very much.
Yeah.
And then, of course, at that time I was living with my husband's parents, you know.
Uh-huh.
But it was a big thing, you know, people were all downtown singing, crying, doing everything.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I want to ask Buddy and Anna if they have questions for you.
No, but I enjoyed finding out who drilled the holes for me to put a rivet in.
So you never knew that, Buddy, huh?
Everybody had to do something, you know?
Yeah, yes, sure did.
Yeah.
That was very interesting,
Anna?
The whole thing.
Yeah, it was. You know what? Now that I think about it, I just wish that we could have had cameras and stuff, you know?
Yeah, we'd have had great stories.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, yeah. With every interview, we always hear something new and something different. It's always interesting.
Right.
It's always fascinating. There's no way to get bored. I mean, honestly, at one point, I realized we had an awful lot of women in our film who worked in Akron, and somebody told me it was going to be really, really boring. And every time I see that film, I think, well, I'm going to get bored here in a minute because the next one's going to be about Akron, but it never was boring to me. I mean, because everybody did something different and they had family stories and all that kind of
thing. Of course, out there in California, I have a branch of the service, you know. Santa Barbara was a beautiful town there, and of course, I used to go dancing there to the El Paseo and all them places, so I made a lot. Nice servicemen, you know, from every branch.
And what was the name you met? You said Santa Barbara, and you went dancing where?
At the American Legion in Santa Barbara.
Oh, okay.
And the El Paseo, that was another place.
I can't understand that word. Tell me again what it is.
El Paseo.
A-L-P-H-A, Alpha?
P-H-A, something, El Paseo. Paseo means go, you know.
And I can't spell it. Spell it the best way you can for me.
El Paseo.
El. El Paseo.
Uh-huh, El Paseo.
Yeah. Oh, I think I know. I'm closer to it, at least, than I was.
Well, okay.
Anna, what questions do you have for Sophie?
I really don't have any other than I wanted to ask her, if the lady that she was talking about that lived there, is she still living or did she pass?
Which one?
The one that you just spoke about that worked.
That worked at the shipyards?
Yes.
She still lives here. She's hard hearing, and it's so hard to talk to somebody that's hard hearing.
Oh, yes. Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and they say,
well, you talk too loud or you talk too low or whatever. And I just have a hard time talking with somebody that's hard hearing.
Yeah.
I do, too.
Right.
So she's real hard of hearing then?
Oh, yeah, she's real hard of hearing.
Okay.
Let me ask you this, Sophie. Are you interested in meeting other Rosies if we could ever get down to Winchester, which I would love to do? Are you interested in meeting some of the Rosies?
Well, yeah, I'm ready to meet any of the women, right? Yeah. It's just as long as it's in this town. I don't drive out of town.
Yeah. Do you drive still?
I'm still driving, yeah.
Oh, really?
My son thinks I shouldn't be driving, but I do. I said, listen here, you're going to have to cut my arm off or my leg to keep me from driving. Because, I take myself to the doctor, and I buy my own groceries and do all my own cooking and I have my cleaning, what little cleaning I do. And that's about it, you know. No, I'm pretty independent. I can't stand to be waited on. Never was.
I can't stand it either. It's bothering me because I'm actually pretty much disabled right now, and it's really bothering me.
I'm not used to it.
Yeah, really. I want to talk to you about any photos that you have. Do you have photos of yourself as a young woman?
Oh, yes, I do.
So I'd love to have some copies. Could your son maybe get some copies and have them emailed over to me?
I'm sure I can get my kids to do that. If I can't get my son, he's so busy, I can get my granddaughters to do it.
Okay. I want your granddaughters to make sure that they get some pictures of you as a young woman, as many as you're comfortable doing. If you take them to a place like Staples or something like that, they can just email them to me, and then nobody has to put them in the mail, and then I have a copy.
I don't know if we have a Staples here or not. I'll find out.
Well, you probably have Office Max or any of that.
Okay.
I think maybe even Walmart. Well, I'm not sure if Walmart will email them. I'm not sure. But I do know that almost any of the office supply stores will. So we need some photos of you. Now, you didn't send me permission to use this interview for education and to make this public, did you? I need to send you a permission slip that you need to send back to me. And I'll get your address here and later, and we'll make sure that... So what I'll send you is a permission slip and a self-addressed stamped envelope, and you look at that permission slip and then send it back to me, and that way we can use this and give it. What we plan to do is send out these interviews to about 15 different libraries and museums.
Oh, yeah.
One of them will be a museum in the Netherlands that hosted three Rosies last year and did a great job doing it.
The museum here in Winchester, they've got all the pictures and stuff of me and my husband and all of that, you know, the museum here in Winchester.
What is the museum called there?
It's a water leak, too. You'll see water in there. It's running all over inside the house. Hot water tank.
Yeah, you know, I don't know what it's called, but it's because it's kind of like fairly new. It's an old...
We got interference on the line here.
I hear it.
I don't know who that's talking. Somebody's talking about water getting in the house. That's not on your end, is it?
That's coming from the floor.
Here, I'm here at the refrigerator.
Well, it's been running.
This is called the Bluegrass Heritage Museum. Did you get it?
I did. Bluegrass Heritage Museum. Why?
Uh-huh. 217. Let's see. That's South Main Street, Winchester, Kentucky.
217 South Main Street,
uh-huh.
Winchester.
Okay. Uh-huh. Now, they've got a lot of my stuff down there.
We're getting interference on the telephone. So I think we're going to have to hang up because we're getting.
So if you want to get any more information, you could contact this museum, and we here in Winchester.
Okay, I will do that.
They've got a lot of stuff down there. My husband's, you know.
Yeah, really. Now that interference quit.
Are you
still on the line, Buddy? Anna, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
I think that interference was coming from Buddy's house,
And
so that's good. I want to know one last thing. If you had to give some advice to young people today, what would it be, Sophie?
You know, a lot of these young kids, you know, they won't take a job unless it just pays high money, and that's crazy. You know, I think they should take any job they're offered. I did.
Yes.
I don't know how you feel about it.
Yeah, well, the biggest problem that I have is I tell young people that they will get a raise when they perform well.
Exactly.
But they don't come to work, and they like even today, you know, I had a worker who was supposed to work in the evening for me because she didn't come to work yesterday, and then she told me in the late part of the day she was going to be playing tennis this evening, and you know, I just can't plan.
Oh, like, you know what? I don't have much tolerance with young people. You know, playing and all that stuff is more important than, you know, than getting making a good living or getting educated or whatever. I wish I would have had the opportunity that these young kids have got that I didn't get.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah, I'll tell you something. That's true. Boy, do I ever. I keep giving them opportunities and think they'll evaluate, and sometimes it just doesn't happen.
It just walks.
Not every time, but sometimes they don't even recognize what an opportunity is.
And you know what? Yeah. I don't know how you feel about it, but I feel like these younger people, they don't care about old people. And you know, you can't believe how I have learned a lot from people a lot older than myself. You know, they've got a lot of knowledge. You know, and I'm ready for that.
Yes, that's right. You teach me something and I'll be there. I'll tell you something. That's great. There's nothing as rewarding to me as being able to understand life in your own society. And there's so many times that I've sat with Rosie's and listened and I thought, you know, that's the answer to that. I never knew. Even when you and I started talking today, Sophie, I've asked many of the women, did you make friendships? They say they enjoyed working, they had no conflict, but they didn't make friends. And I didn't realize till you told me that it was because it was so noisy you couldn't make a friend.
You couldn't.
I never realized that.
And you know what? And then when you'd go to the restroom, you know, you couldn't stay in there very long, you know, because you had to get back to work, you know?
Right.
So that's just the way it went. But you know what? I enjoyed every minute of it. I'd do it again if I had to.
Yeah, and I think most women did enjoy it.
Uh-huh.
Well, now, one of the things I need you to do is I want to give you my telephone number, and I want your granddaughters to call me so I can talk with them again about getting some photos of you. Okay, if you got a pen there, and I'll give you my phone
I'm
number.
I'm sitting right here at the kitchen table ready with the pencil here.
Okay, it's area code 304.
304. Wish I had a third arm. Okay.
776.
776.
4743.
4-7-4. See, my paper's slipping. 4-3.
Yeah. 776-4743. And what I need you to do is have either one or all of your granddaughters call me. Who do you think is going to be calling me? Give me a name.
I think maybe Allison. My granddaughter Allison.
Okay. Now you ask Allison to call me, and I'll tell her exactly how to send me some pictures. And then when we put this interview, what we're going to do is take the audio interview, the sound. We will then listen to it and put it on paper word for word. And then we'll take whatever photos we have of you. And then when we mail these interviews out to different libraries, it'll have a picture of you as a young woman, and even if you've got pictures of you now.
Oh, I'm just so ugly. You know, I can't believe what age does to you. You know it?
Well, I had a friend.
I don't look like
I had a,
I don't look the same, like the same person, really,
but
honestly.
But, you know, it's really interesting. I've had so many older people say to me, I look in the mirror and I say, who is that?
Yeah, me, really.
Yeah,
I look in the mirror and I say, well, I don't recognize you.
But we're all the same inside, aren't we?
We don't change
inside. I have to think that I really believe that the older people get, the more they're likely to be their true selves. You don't have to pretend anymore. You don't have to do things you don't.
You really know, I never did do that. I have people tell me all the time, you haven't changed one bit from day one that we met you. You know, so that's good news to me. You know, I never did get above my raisin or nothing like that, or thought I was better than anybody. And I've had a few fights with some of my peers because they think that Spanish people and Mexican people are the same race, and they're not.
Yeah. Well, that phrase, "Don't get above your raisin," we heard that in country people in West Virginia say that all the time, and it means,
oh yeah,
you know, basically don't go out and get prissy.
Yeah, really.
Don't do that because you're who you are. Well, Sophie, I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed knowing you, and in a day or so, I'll put your permission slip in the mail, and then as soon as you get that, you need to sign it because I can't give this over to the public or to any libraries or whatever until we have your written permission. Okay?
Well, you know what? I gave you my permission right now. Be okay.
No, but see, there's not the same record. The
I see what you're saying. A
written permission, yeah.
It's got to be on record,
Even before they can listen to it, like at a library, they need to have the written permission.
Yeah.
But I'll be mailing that to you.
Okay.
And if you have any questions or ever just want to talk to her,
so you want my one of my granddaughters to call you on this number that you gave me?
Say it to me again. One of your granddaughters did what?
One of my granddaughters to call you on this number that you gave me.
Yes, that's right. And if she will call me, then I'll talk with her. And you have my number, too. If you ever need me, you call me on that same 304 number.
Yeah, 304, right. Then let me read you this back. 304-776-6174.
Okay. Three. No.
Let's start again. Did I miss something?
Yeah, I think there's an extra number in there. 776.
Wait.
47 43.
Okay,
now
that's
read
your
it
number.
Back to me. Yeah, read it back to me.
776-4743.
Exactly that. Exactly. And if you
and
ever
your
need
name's
me,
what now?
My name is Ann, and my birth name was Ann Frazier, F-R-A-Z-I-E-R.
Oh, we have some Fraziers live here.
Do you? Well, you know, it's a real old, solid Scottish name.
Yeah.
And then my married, my name at this point is Montague, M-O-N-T-A-G-U-E.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll tell you how that happened was very strange. I lived for a year in Japan, and I lived at a home for scholars, and I met some people who were real artistic, and I really liked them. One was a composer and, you know, all that. And I said to them one day, I had just divorced, and I said, I don't want to go back to my maiden name, and I don't want to keep my married name, and what should I do? And they said, well, let us choose your name. And I said, nah, I don't want to change my name. I mean, you know, it seems kind of strange. Anyway, they talked me into changing my name, and they also talked me into letting them choose my name. And I like simple names, like I've always liked, you know, like Longstreet, I always loved that name, and Timberlake, I loved that one. And I like the names Green, and, you know, simple names.
Oh, yeah.
And anyway, they took a vote. They had lunch one day and took a vote, and they named me, and I said, no, I don't like it. And they said, you know, you promised. And they got around me and said, you know, you promised. And And they said, you always say you don't break a promise unless you have to, and you don't have to break this promise. So when I got back to the United States, I went to Boston, and I went over and got my name changed. So it's been that way since 1984 or 85, something like that. Anyway, I've got used to it.
That's what I was just getting ready to ask you. Did you get used to your name? You knew it.
I kind of got used to it. Frankly, I'd still like to have the name Green or Jones or Smith or something like that.
Yeah.
But that isn't the way it worked out. So.
I always thought the name Adams was so pretty, you know, and I couldn't believe it.
Oh, I said that to Buddy earlier on. I said, Sophie Adams, what a great name. What a great name.
Yeah, and then my husband was Lewis Adams, you know, and that rhymed good, too.
Yeah,
and,
no, Sophie Adams is a great name.
And my mother-in-law, she was Stella Lee Adams, you know.
Uh-huh.
I had a wonderful mother-in-law, I'm telling you.
Is that right?
Oh, good gosh. Okay, I was so lucky. So lucky. She's the sweetest person.
She was a farm woman.
Oh, yeah, she was.
And how many children did she have?
She had seven.
Seven children. My goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a different world, isn't it, Sophie?
Oh, it sure is, yeah. Let me tell you something. I wouldn't trade the way I was raised, the way I lived, for everything these kids has got today.
I agree.
Oh, they don't respect older people. They think they're smarter than anybody.
Right.
They just irritate me.
Yeah. And I agree.
I know you've run into the same thing, I'm sure.
Well, being 77 means that I'm pretty close to the Rosie's ages. My mother was 20 when I was born, and the war was over when I was 6, so I remember the end of the war.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm just not a whole generation younger than you, a generation and a half younger than you. So.
Yeah.
And fortunately, I'm
sorry about your broken hip. That's odd.
I've had some pretty serious issues, and I guess the real thing for me is I'm not sure that it's getting better. See, they kept saying it would get better, but it's been 5.5 months now, and I'm not.
Oh, do you have a family yourself?
No, I have no family members at all.
Oh, my. You're alone. You're a loner, aren't you?
So you Rosies are my family.
Yeah. Well, of course, I got these grandchildren. Of course, they're all busier, and, you know, busier bird dogs doing this and this and that. And I've got a cat and a dog. But anyhow, I love my grandchildren. You know, they're all busy doing stuff.
I got to tell you a West Virginia saying, and then we'll hang up here, but I'm busier than a three-legged cat in a litter box.
Oh, yeah.
And there's another one that's a little bit smutty, so I won't say that.
That explains it all.
Yeah, that explains it all.
Right.
Anyway, I'm so glad to have talked with you, Sophie, and frankly, I want to take a day, and Betty's son drives, but she doesn't like to take long trips. And Anna lives a good 4 hours from here, so to go from Anna to come from Morgantown to Winchester would
Winchester.
Be a full day. It would be a 9-hour drive or something.
Yeah.
So maybe eight.
We have beautiful country here.
Well, I've been to Winchester, and I really like my...
Oh, you have?
Yeah, do you know Michael Kindred very well?
Not really.
He's the principal over there at the school, you know.
Yeah, I just met him. I think that was at the library.
And he's been so helpful to us. He's one of our board members, and he loves the Rosies, so I love him. I'm very proud to have him on our board.
He was very nice. I enjoyed him very much when I met him.
Yeah. And he's because he's a principal of a high school, he understands young people. But also because he's principal of a vo-tech school, you know, he really understands the need for practical well as just, you know, academic training.
Mm-hmm.
And I consider myself to be very practical, but I'm also pretty academic when I have to be.
Yeah.
So I like doing this project because I've learned so many things that nobody else really has ever bothered to even ask about, you know?
Yeah.
It's really pretty wonderful to be in this position. Anyway, I will be sending you something in the mail, and then you make sure that your granddaughter calls me as soon as she can.
I will.
Can, yeah.
I'll have Elsa call you.
Thank you. Thank you, Sophie. I'm really, really glad I got to know you. Thank you so much.
I got to know you as well. You know, maybe sometime, like you say, maybe you come to Winchester, we can meet each other in person.
Oh,
you know?
I can't wait to come to Winchester. If I could get a ride down there, see, I don't drive by myself anymore, see.
Well, I don't go any place out of Winchester. I just drive here in Winchester, and that's it. I don't even go out to the farm and visit my son out there.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's just so much traffic on the road and all of that stuff, and I don't see all that good, you know, and I'm just not going to chance it, that's all.
No, that's right. You just
my son could come and see me, you know.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Anyway, you don't take chances, and I'll keep trying to find a way down there. And if I could get Buddy's son to take me, but Buddy doesn't like to travel more than about an hour at a time.
Oh yeah.
Most. And from her town in West Virginia to Winchester, I would say it's 3.5 hours.
Yeah.
And she just doesn't feel like she can do that. But we'll figure it out. I'll get down there one way or another.
Well, that'll be great.
And I just can't wait to meet you.
Well,
I love you, and I'll be talking to you soon.
All right. Thanks a lot
for
calling. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Take care of yourself. Don't pick up
I will.
Any,
I'm trying. I'm trying.
Don't pick up any wooden nickels now.
That's right.
Okay.
Bye now.
Well, I'll say good evening. Bye.
Bye now.